Hi, this is Wendy Halley, and you're listening to Lucid Cafe. Life sure has some interesting twists and turns, doesn't it? And then, when you least expect it, sometimes life can bring you back around full circle. This was the case with my guest, John Nave. John and I were childhood friends. His family lived next door to my grandparents, and we hung out a lot as kids. But we lost touch probably before we hit adolescence. And I never would have guessed in a million years that we'd reconnect the way we did. It was about 12 years ago when I was visited by the spirit of John's older brother, Tom, on the day that he unexpectedly died, while I was taking a shower. Yes, my life can certainly be colorful. As much as the reason why we reconnected sucks, it's been really cool to get to know John again and to learn about the amazing career he created for himself. In this episode, John talks about how he pursued his passion for music to become a very successful tour manager of artists like Pat Metheny, the Gypsy Kings, and Joe Strummer. We talk about how his brother Tom reunited us, his rock star lifestyle, and the life lessons he's learned along the way. I hope you enjoy my conversation with my old friend, John Nave. Well, thanks for coming on the podcast, John.
Oh, you're welcome. Glad to be here.
I thought it would be really fun to talk to you because you have what most people would consider a very sexy job. But I have a feeling that the reality of your job is probably not as sexy as it may seem.
If you could flash to a picture of me at 9 in the morning and see how sexy I am in my job.
So why don't you share with us what it is you actually do for a living right now?
Okay. So for the most part, what I do is manage live events and music generally. And, you know, I've always had a passion for music in my life. The prominent part of my job is to manage bands and manage the road. So a tour manager, but I also have a background in production. And I started as an audio engineer. And that's the guy in the middle of the audience with all the knobs and the lights. And then I've graduated to, you know, always wanted to move up to whatever the next thing is. I think we always are trying to do that. And that was, for me, tour management is the highest position you can get on, you know, and be on the road. And here I am. I've done it.
What kinds of bands have you toured with or have you managed?
It's interesting. I can never really grasp it until I fill out a Japan visa, which you have to list them all.
Oh, really?
You have to prove why you're needed in Japan. And I'm always struggling. Am I really needed in Japan? But I had my first start as an audio engineer, as a system technician or whatever, as I was getting going. I worked with a lot of bands, like a little bit here, you know, with like Yanni and I'm trying to think.
Yanni?
Yeah. That was one of my first trips on the road was with Yanni, just flying the PA for a company called Britannia Row. And they were... they're a British company, but they moved to Hyde Park, New York, where I met them and started working in their shop. But then I left them and I found another company that would teach me what I wanted to know because I was really looking to learn about audio. You know, with my college degree, you know, I was happy to sweep the floor, happy to do whatever. I just wanted to learn audio. I wanted to become an engineer. And I found a company that did like Liza Minnelli and Tony Bennett and Frank Sinatra. And a great guy by the name of Danny Fabrizi that brought me under his wing and taught me and would answer every question I had. Now, let's talk about tangents. I'm already off on a tangent. Leading up into that first band, but that's kind of the progress I made. I wanted to do this, and I just sought opportunity. I finally got a break after doing that for a while. I got a break and someone asked me if I would want to go do the Temptations. And I was about to say no. And I was telling, we spoke a little bit earlier outside of this podcast about this fellow by the name of John Jackson, who is my brother-in-law. He's also a little, to me, he's kind of a spiritual guy that I just look up to. And he said, man, you know, you're saying no, but you really have to go give that a shot. This is opportunity knocking. You can't, if there's something you have to learn, go learn it. But
well, what was making you say no to begin with?
Fear.
Ah.
That lovely counterpart in life.
Oh yeah, I've heard of it.
My when I met my wife, she used to have in her car on her dashboard, like a little saying that said, "Choose fear or love. It's one or the other." You know, and I was like, okay, that's cool. You know, it's like you're right. You have a choice about fear. I told him, you know, I'm just a technician. I can help that guy out. I've never done that job. I never was the guy. The interesting thing is, so I went and tried, and the universe had conspired to make that work for me. I used all the skills that I had and not the skills I didn't have, and I got the job. So that changed my life entirely. I went from this technician to the next level, which is a front of house guy, and traveling with the band, riding on the tour bus, which to me was very exotic and, you know, about as coming out of Poughkeepsie, New York, it's about as cool as you can get, you know, cool as you can,
yeah.
Which doesn't say much for Poughkeepsie.
Poor Poughkeepsie.
Poor Poughkeepsie.
Yeah.
So from there, and then from there on, I was able to do work with these bands, Temptations, and I did a lot of jazz. I worked with Tony Bennett for a while, you know, as an audio engineer and as a assisting his audio engineer and as a stage manager. I worked with, you know, Liza Minnelli. I worked for a lot of rock bands. I spent a long time with Joe Strummer, who used to sing for The Clash.
Love Joe Strummer.
Oh God, yeah. He was just a really great guy. And then he passed away.
Yeah.
And
sad. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Got it. You know, I went. I worked with Katie Lang as a tour manager. Joan Baez. Just a number of bands that, you know, currently for a long time it's been Pat Metheny and the Gypsy Kings. And then I'll go out.
That's how we reconnected.
That is how we reconnected, exactly. Well, actually, we reconnected via my brother. Really, but then we met again on.
That's right. That it would have been because of Tom.
Yeah, Tom searched you out. In my feeling, like you're the only one open enough to receive his message. So.
So do you want to tell that story so people know what you're referring to?
Yeah. I thought we could leave that as a false leader up to it and take a commercial break. And
what a tease.
my brother, and I'm pretty sure he was 46 years old, died of congestive heart failure. But also, you know, he was kind of spiraling down for a while. I think he was, you know, chronically depressed and in my own mind, he just kind of gave up living. I mean, he lost the path of why we're here and what we're doing. So he had passed away. He was getting ready to go with your uncle, right? Chris is your
right,
uncle.
My uncle Chris.
Yeah, to Florida. And they lived next door to each other they both helping out the parents or living in the childhood homes or whatever. I think Tom actually bought my dad's house. So he passed away, but then we got a note from you shortly after that. And I don't even know if we knew at the time if he'd been discovered, but that he had been pestering you to try to tell his story and to send a message to our family and to Chris, especially Chris, who was a little bit more vulnerable at the time.
Right.
And, you know, the essence of it is, you know, wow, you know, I'm okay. I kind of missed a boat. I kind of forgot what it was all about. But, you know, it's really cool here. Actually, that I still have your letter saved and read it every now and then.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it was really instrumental to helping my family. And when I ran, I was the, I don't even know what you call the guy at the funeral that, you know, does all the kind of the eulogy and stuff like that and ran the whole thing. That
you tour managed your brother's funeral?
Tour managed my brother's funeral. It was very instrumental in helping myself and my family to have that note, to have a little bit of information that to get us through that time. It was super important.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what we went on that. And then did I ever send you, I don't know, I made a video about his life and, you know, put it to Pink Floyd, Wish You Were Here.
No, I've never seen that.
Okay. I'll send you a link to video. It's great. And we can put it at the bottom of this and you can go watch my Vimeo link.
Oh, that would be cool.
Yeah. And it ends with something from your letter which says, you know, I'm okay. So that at the very end, you'll see that was really instrumental. And it's actually a beautiful tribute. Even if you didn't know this guy, I think you'd appreciate it. Because he was really a great guy and he had a lot of great friends and he just couldn't see that. He couldn't see all the positives. And, you know, we lean away from that, but it's important because life is about gratitude. You know, if you're thankful for things, if you just take a moment to recognize all the beauty in the world, then you do focus on it more and you see more and more of that. And if you want to focus on negative things, you can see more and more negative things. I mean,
yeah. So I guess he was a little stuck, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. He was kind of a Rush Limbaugh listening kind of guy.
I didn't know that. I didn't know him really well as an adult. So just to kind of clue the listeners in on how you and I know each other, your family lived next door to my grandmother.
Correct.
And my grandfather, but my grandfather died when I was pretty young. But I would spend a lot of time at my grandmother's house on the weekends and in the summer, and you and I are the same age, and we would hang out.
We would.
And so my uncle, who is only 7 years older than me, he was like tight with your brother, who is probably, what, about 7 years older than you?
Exactly, yeah. They were the same age, so.
Yeah. So we have this long-standing family connection. And then, you know, life goes on. I went on to, I you know, moved away. You did your thing, hanging out with Tony Bennett and such. And then, I had my whole shamanic thing happen. My world kind of got turned inside out in a very interesting and disturbing way. But I did a bunch of shamanic training and just like I said, these doors opened up. And I remember, I believe I had just gotten home from teaching. It was an evening class. And my husband, John, had told me that Chris, my uncle, had called very upset that he had gone to his friend's house and discovered his friend's body, but didn't say who the friend was in his message. So before I called Chris back, I jumped in the shower really quickly because it was late. And this is strange, but while I was in the shower, I saw an image in my mind's eye of your brother, the way I remember him when he was really young. And he started to talk to me. He said he wanted me to tell Chris that he was sorry. He had said to me that he died in his sleep and that it was his heart. And at that point, I think I remember getting the impression that it was possibly congestive heart failure or a heart attack. Tom said, "Tell Chris I'm okay." And he talked about how he really let his life go to shit and stopped taking care of himself. He said his body wasn't healthy and finally gave out. And then Tom said he was depressed and felt alone and didn't exercise or eat well. He wanted to relay to Chris that his experience of the afterlife was really not that bad. In fact, it was kind of cool and a lot different than he thought it would be. I remember that Tom had a huge smile on his face and he said that he felt a lot better at that point and he was happy again. And that's what I remember. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah, it sure does. It's interesting. I have another belief that, you know, that when you die, of course, we turn to energy. And then it all makes sense. I mean, you know all, you see all, you know, you kind of remember what your journey was and things like that. I think, you know, we keep recycling till we can figure it out for some reason to become a higher spiritual evolution. I mean, that's my personal weird religion that I share by myself. But for him, that was a lot of it. He just kind of gave up and, it's a shame that that we have to wait to find that out and that no one could reach him in his life. And it's interesting because you can't, it's hard to tell people anything or to change their ways. They have to see it for themselves. They have to be able to find it somehow.
Very true. Yeah.
And so, you know, the greatest thing I always say is, you know, we live by example and set a good example. If people see that, then they'll want to follow that. They, you know, especially people want to be happy. They just have to realize what that path is. So the other interesting thing going back is in that our relationship as kids, and I think I might have told you this once before, but I always, my best memory of you is us playing in the backyard of my parents' house, and there was a swing set. And we were talking through the swing set tube at the top that holds the swings and everything. So that was always my memory of you communicating through this tube. And then much later, it turns out that you become a communicator, or you delivered this important message. And I just think that's fascinating.
Huh.
You know, there are no accidents, or there are, you know. Yeah, I just thought that was a kind of a fascinating thing.
That's cool. That's interesting. That's the memory you have.
It's interesting how that road just goes, and you know, we have an intention. We just don't have an intention, not to expectation, not to have an ultimate destination, I think is important. So
ultimate destination.
Well, this is going back to another lesson that I learned. That someone once told me the secret to life is to have no expectations. That became my mantra for a while, and it was after a really weird time. Let me know if the noise in the background gets too much.
I don't hear anything right now.
Okay, great. There's some leaf blower guys. They're like a terrorist cell that come here every Tuesday. Across the neighborhood.
Yeah, because you can't have leaves.
You can't have leaves. This was a very pinnacle time in my life where my life totally changed. And amazing things happened. Because I just had this intention. And I didn't care what the outcome was. And I think before I was very fixated on the outcome, and I felt like I was always pushing the outcome away. And life really opened up after that. The weird thing is, never saw that guy again. That guy that had that great message for me.
Huh.
And it's someone I really liked. And it was a weird thing. I guess I can tell the story. I was dating his friend. She was in, you know, I was still living in Los Angeles. She was living in Poughkeepsie, wherever that area, Hudson Valley. And where we grew up. We'd fly back and forth, and, you know, it really wasn't working out for whatever reason. We were just, you know, it just was not a good thing. And when it ended, they lived next to each other. He was like one of my best friends. He actually moved me out to California, him and I did the road trip. And, on the way home from that, talking to her or whatever, I stopped at his place and he gave me that message. Then I continued on home. And then for a reason, I didn't want to, you know, I felt like I was complaining to him a lot. I didn't want to complain. I just went off, just experienced life, and I had a great time. And then finally, when we talked again, I said, hey, you know, I want to thank you for that message. That's changed my life. And you know, I want to show you that I was having a good time. I wasn't complaining and things like that. But that was the last, that second time we talked was just the last time we talked. And it turned out later, I guess, that these two were dating, maybe even when we were dating the guy. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe that's what happened. And then there was just some shame. I don't really know what the reason would be, but.
Oh, I thought you were going to say something like, and I found out he wasn't real.
Oh, yeah. That could be a good one, right? That story. Yeah, and just never talked to him. I reached out to him, I sent him a few emails, tried to connect, and we even have mutual friends, but he's just like, no, don't want to know about you anymore. So I'm like, great, well, thank you for that message. I got that great message. I wasn't going to dwell on the fact that, okay, we don't talk anymore, but we, you know, I always appreciate that message about having no expectations, that's, I think that's such an important thing. I mean, I think you have to, I always added to it about going into things with ultimate abandon and with an intention, but letting the universe sort out the details, because there's a myriad of ways that things can happen.
Yeah, you know, we have no say in it, do we?
No. And that's how everything is delivered. But put that intention out there, put that energy out there, and somehow you know, it manifests. And I hate to sound too, you know, using these LA words, you know, manifesting. Or the actor and actress says that, but yeah, you have to let it, you have to let it happen. You have to let it happen. You have to go back. You have to make the intentions. Like if you want to be a doctor and you don't go to medical school, well, you're not going to be a doctor. It's not going to magically happen.
Not a doctor I'd want to go see. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You have to pursue it.
It sounds like the real important factor would be to trust.
Yeah. Yeah. That's important. You have to trust it. You know, I think also you have to believe enough in what you're doing. I always tell the people that I mentor kind of a lot of people in the music business and just say that, you know, if you want to be a songwriter, write songs. And you have to love that. It has to be something you do where it feels like 5 minutes have gone by, but 5 hours have just gone by because you love doing it.
Right.
And you're doing the right thing. And if you're not doing that, if you tell me you want to be a performer, if you want to be a whatever, and you're not doing anything about it, it's not even a hobby, then you really don't want to do it.
That's a good point. Follow your bliss.
Yeah. I always like it. I think it was my father-in-law that said, your attention goes where your interests lie.
Ah, and the Hawaiians have a saying that's similar to that. Energy flows where your attention goes.
Exactly. What are we paying attention to?
Yeah, if you're paying attention to how things are not going to work, or if you have a negative belief system that maybe I'm not good enough or something like that, then that's going to interfere with, I guess, you obtaining your goal. But the goal itself is neutral, right? It's just something you want to achieve. But if you add passion to it, that seems to be like an important ingredient, according to what you're saying, right?
Yeah, you know it. It's interesting to see it fed back. Like, you know, I've only given the information. I haven't really thought about it that much. you're right. You're right. It's almost like it's an exponential, or it expands at a geometric rate when you add passion into the situation. You know, an intention, anything you believe in, you know, I guess all those things are true. You know, whatever you believe you can achieve, or, you know, things like that, they really are. And going back to gratitude, I think we mentioned earlier that that's why it's so important to have gratitude or to focus on gratitude, because you're focusing on something positive and not the negative. And people think they're alone, you know, with their fears, and they're not. I mean, successful people have fears too.
It's pretty universal. It's a kind of a human thing.
Yeah.
It comes with the package. Yeah.
Yeah. We only see through our monocular, kind of what we want to see. We see that person. I think about a friend of mine that's a hugely successful executive and, you know, broke through the glass ceiling. But that's not how she sees it. You know, it's like, and does she sleep good at night? No. I mean, she's always, it's stressful. A lot of times we don't see how lucky we are with our own current situation.
Yeah, and we make a lot of assumptions when we take people at face value. We assume that because they have a nice car, they seem to have a lot of money, or they have a high profile position work-wise, that they're doing really well. But behind closed doors, they could be really suffering.
Exactly. We have no idea what their reality is. And that's always like, you know, as a kid growing up, you thought everybody else's family was perfect until you realized they were completely dysfunctional. You know, everybody was, you know, in your neighborhood.
Tim, where'd you live? Just kidding.
But, you know, as the stories kind of unfolded later, you're like, okay, I thought we were the only, you know, absurd family in the neighborhood. Like, no, we were too. Everybody has their things.
Everybody does. You're right. Absolutely.
And then, and of course, you know, with the fears, it's if we're going to embrace fear, we're going to certainly see a lot more fear. I think that's actually fueling my own fire right now, just this conversation. So it's great. What a great timely thing. As I step back into transforming myself a little bit, I'm super happy with what I did. I'm super happy with where I am. I'm blessed with all the things that that have happened, but I don't want to quit yet. You know, I want to do something. You know, I want to keep growing and keep expanding and aligning myself with the right people and going back out there. And I tell you what, I have fears. I have fears because, you know, I'm at that age where maybe people aren't interested in me anymore. you know, that's it. But the greatest thing about stopping those fears is just going to action. You know, you don't really have a chance to be afraid if you're in action and, you know, doing stuff. I think that's, you know, just keep yourself busy, keep yourself occupied.
Yeah, I guess kind of like if you're at the end of the diving board and you want to dive into the pool, you can either stand there and think about all the ways in which it could go south, or you just dive. But once you've jumped off, you can't reverse it. You just, it's a done deal. You're in it.
Exactly. No more thinking. No more thinking about all the possibilities that lie on the other side. It's more of just reacting to, okay, I'm going to enter this water gracefully, or in my case, maybe not so gracefully.
Yeah, but you're headed that way. It's kind of like playing an instrument, right? I mean, once you learn how to play an instrument, it's not about thinking about playing anymore. It's just about playing. It's just you're doing it rather than thinking it.
Yeah. Your focus changes to, you know, a tone.
Yeah. You're not thinking about, oh, I wonder if I'm going to fuck up this next phrase or, you know, or miss this rhythm or whatever.
Sure,
you're just playing it. But the moment you start thinking about it is the moment you lose it.
Yeah. That's interesting. And there's something there about that, you know, I played in a band. I did play for a long time in high school. I played in a heavy metal band, which was, I was just so passionate about music. I was just so happy to be with it. I found a bunch of guys. We were together for a long time. And we were very successful for back then.
Really?
Yeah, we did. You know, we did well. We always sold a lot of tickets, but we never got super famous. And back then, you always needed the record company guy to sign off on it. And we had record people at our shows and stuff like that. And like, hey, this guy's interested. You're going to get a deal. You're going to get, you know, you're going to sign something. And then he'd get fired and it'd be somebody else. And it was just like the industry really controlled your outcome.
Yeah.
I always thought it was a shame, because if that band was today, they'd be very successful, because we put a lot of effort into marketing and all the other stuff. We would have found our, you know, it's easier today. You don't rely on the record company.
Oh, no, it's just the internet has leveled the playing field.
Sure. And you could write music in your house. I mean, you could record your band in your studio for a couple $100. We took every penny we made as a band and just kept putting it back into our sound system and you know, hopefully recording. But recording was very rudimentary back then. It wasn't very good. So we had to save money to go into the studio, which would be $10,000 to do a demo or something, which to us was just unheard of. $10,000.
Yeah, $10,000. And it was analog, right?
Yeah, it was analog, which honestly, I still prefer tape, you know, got that beautiful sound to it. But that was like, it was 1 inch, and then you went to 2 inch. I think 1 inch, maybe it was like $5,000 for our first one. But it was
it's still a lot of money for one demo.
Yeah. Yeah, for putting out an EP. And then eventually we had a cassette, which people might not know what that is.
Yeah, you might. What is a cassette, John? At least it wasn't an 8-track.
At least it wasn't an 8-track.
Yeah, we're not that old. Yeah.
Yeah. And no one has a cassette player anymore, so that's good.
Yeah. If you don't know what a cassette is, Google it.
Yeah. For a long time, I spent in that time in the band. But the thing is, I think we're going back to rote. And I was saying about that is that we would play those songs so many times that you didn't think about the song at all anymore. And that was a great thing. It just came off of your fingers.
Yeah.
And it didn't mean you didn't make mistakes, but you were less likely to make mistakes by just really rehearsing it. And that's true with everything in life. I mean, you got to do it. What was the fellow that you have to do something 10,000 times? And
I think it was Malcolm Gladwell, right? You wrote about that.
Yeah. The tipping point.
Yes.
And that was the thing about the Beatles doing it 10,000 times, which makes a lot of sense. It's just where it becomes
10,000 hours, right?
10,000 hours. That's what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not 10,000 times. I've done things 10,000 times and I'm not an expert.
I think I could say the same thing about myself. Yeah.
But I have to say, you know, you talk about how it all equals out, but those are some fun times of being in that band.
And, yeah, what did you play?
I played guitar. I was there was two guitar players. I was a rhythm guitar player, which was a good role for me because I was kind of like the support. I wasn't the star, you know, and you could solo all the time. But I was always like, I always thought I was a good team player. And that's what a rhythm guitar player, it's got to hold it down and just be part of the team. And of course, I also did the business for the band pretty much, which was a natural. If I look back at some videos and stuff like that, I'm always the guy, you know, making the deal or doing, you know, something or talking to people. And that, you know, of course, is what I do now.
Yes, I was just thinking, yep.
Yeah.
You just slipped right into that role.
Yeah. And it's a, I do miss playing and I still play. It's a little harder in Los Angeles. I don't even have an amplifier. I mean, you have to play in your headphones and stuff.
Oh, because neighbors will complain?
Yeah. Even in my own building.
Maybe when the leaf blowers are there.
Yes, exactly.
That's the time to do it.
Who would even know I was playing? I mean, I probably sound just like a leaf blower. I love it. That's a good idea.
It sounds like you're wanting to wind down from being a tour manager.
Well, that's interesting. I like being a tour manager. However, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard on your body. I mean, I think my current clientele that I have, it's, if you're going to do it, you should be appreciated for it. And I have to say, at least one of my clients, he does appreciate it, but he works so hard. I mean, like, you know, he'll do like 6 shows in a row. And if you look at the hours you put in and the toll on your body, I don't think that's worth it anymore. That's a young person's thing if you want to do that. And it's funny, if anybody ever looked at like labor laws on what we do out there on the road, you break them all. And it's not even a great paying job at that point. But I do, at the same time, I do produce events, you know, kind of be the guy that if something live is happening, for example, somebody wanted to have Chicago, the band Chicago, play at their birthday party, some rich people.
Clearly.
You know, I came on board as a consultant and I can help them buy the band and I can help them do everything and negotiate contracts and be the voice of reason for the entertainment industry. But as that went along, I ended up producing the whole show in somebody's backyard in Miami. So I do a lot of those kind of things. I can make things happen, make a live event happen. And the interesting thing is I actually wasn't even at the show. I did it from Europe, staying up.
Really?
Yeah, staying up on, you know, my cell phone on a tour bus crossing Europe. But a lot of things happen where they want me to do live events. I did one for somebody's wedding where they had Bruno Mars and Seal and all these entertainment. So, you know, we're the people that can make it happen. When you have one day to do it, that's what I do. That's what people like me do. We like that. We like a little bit of a stress there of doing that. I'd like to do more of that. I don't know how.
Some are one day events rather than months of touring.
Right. And you say it's a one day event, but it's actually 6 months in the making to get to that one day.
Does it really take that much time?
At least, you know, usually buying an act and doing it. Your best set is, a year.
Wow.
We have done things in a lot shorter time, a couple of months. And a lot of really rich people will maybe do it in a month. It just depends on the scope and how many people and what other bits and pieces are involved. Unfortunately, I don't have to do anything with the you know, serving meals or anything like that. I just focus on entertainment and production. So doing more of that, maybe working more in Los Angeles. I mean, I live in a city where there's all this stuff going on and I get on a plane and I go to work. So I'm not really in the loop of those people here, but you have to get out there and meet and greet and find those people, you know, find those avenues. And then if it was to be with a band again, or to go back on the road with a band, you know, find something that's just an easier schedule. I have worked for people that have more realistic schedules, and it's actually really fun to travel and to make these things happen. I've always loved the travel aspect of it, so I'd hate to give that up completely.
Favorite place that you've been to?
Oh, wow. God. I get that a lot. The more exotic, the better for me. I love Southeast Asia.
Or North Jersey?
North Jersey is exotic.
Yeah.
However, I never went back to North Jersey. But yeah, I would say, we haven't been, We went to Iceland last year. That was great.
Oh, I've always wanted to go there.
Yeah, that's it. Icelandic people are just cool. They're just
and
cool.
They produce some pretty badass music.
They're amazing. Yeah, there's some real talent there. And that was a great experience. So I can find almost something everywhere that I really like. So to say I have a favorite place is hard, but I do like, I love the Philippines. The Filipino people are like the nicest people on the planet. They're just cut from a different cloth and they're huge American music connoisseurs. That's a place I would love to, if I ever had to start a company, I think I'd want to start it in the Philippines, because the people would be so passionate working. If you took care of them, they'd make the best products. There's a lot of places like that. You know, I've been to South Africa and Australia, New Zealand, all through South America, and I like them all. It's an interesting perspective too, to come with an entertainer, because you're seeing the best side of things. It might be different if you're just traveling as a tourist. You might get a different perspective on things.
That's a good point.
I've always loved Japan, and it was interesting. I found out something about Japan. I always loved it because Japan had this, it seemed this great culture and, you know, respect and honor. But eventually I found out, I worked one tour of Japan. I've been there many times. And none of that stuff existed, you know. And I realized, someone finally told me that it's reserved for other Japanese. The honor and all the respect. It's like in business, you know, you're honorable if you're successful.
Huh.
Whatever it takes to be successful is what's important. You know, that interesting how that goes. But still, Japan is a great place. And people are wonderful.
All right. So switch gears a little bit. When you bump up against challenges or obstacles, how do you typically handle those things?
That's a good question. There's different kinds of challenges and different kinds of obstacles. A lot of times, I think in what we do professionally, if it's on a tour with a band, and there's always a problem every day, you've done a lot of research in advance to already kind of know what your options were when you're there. And for some reason, when things happen like that, I just think clearly, and I just go into action. I think that the moment you're in action, the paths open up. And that's interesting. We said that earlier.
Right. I was thinking the same thing.
But yeah, you know, there was a time we were on vacation with my wife and some friends, and flights are canceled, but they want us to stay in a commune 40 minutes from the airport. And my wife looks at me, she goes, get on the phone and do something. So I got on the phone and I found the Ritz-Carlton, and I got us rooms in the Ritz-Carlton. This is like New Year's Eve, and everything sold out, and everybody said no, and everybody's trying to do everything. And I realized I just tour managed our vacation. So
it's what you do.
It's what I do. If you're in action, then the answers come. They you know, you just make them happen. You don't know what you're going to do to make it happen, but you have to be in action. If you're thinking about it, worrying about it, fearful about it, if you're on the edge of the diving board, A, I'm hoping you already checked to make sure there's water in the pool.
Good point. Yep.
So that's about being prepared regardless, you know. But if you're in action, like I said, if you jump, now it's you in the water. You know, you've got to get into the water. So that's your main concern about how, you know, if you're in action, making phone calls, be nice to everybody. That'd be the other thing. You're going to get a lot further making people want to help you than complaining and bitching about your current situation. They're not going to want to help you.
That makes sense. So you don't want to be an asshole.
Don't want to be an asshole. Some people can't help it. but yeah, you really don't want to be an asshole.
Kindness seems to go a long way.
Yeah. If people like you, and if you put them in the position to help you, people are amazing. They're beautiful. They want to help. They really do. Most people really want to help you. I mean, they will. And there's where your answers lie, by creating a community out of that situation.
Are you good at asking for help?
I wonder if I am. I mean, yeah, I guess I am in those situations. It's interesting. I'm actually running a parallel in my mind to something personal that's going on, you know, with like a real estate project. And I'm like, am I doing the same things I'm in that that I'm talking about professionally? And it's an interesting parallel that I might have to check myself on.
Huh.
I love that phrase, check yourself before you wreck yourself.
Yeah.
I think it was like a rap song or something.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
So as I say that, I'm like, you know, I'm going to really tour manage this other situation too. Be in action. So as you're in action, things open up, pathways open up, things happen.
So what happens when you bump up against fear?
Fear stifles you. It really does. You think about all the bad things that could happen, even though they haven't happened. You invent solutions. Yeah, when you're in fear, you're saying to yourself that, okay, I'm not good enough. I can't do it. And you're feeding all the wrong information into the situation. If you're in action, you're creating an outcome, you know, seeing what happens, letting the universe work its thing. Fear just stifles everything.
So when you personally bump up against your own fear, you create a plan. How am I going to address this? And then you do it.
Yeah. Even if I don't have a plan, I try to go into action.
How much does intuition play into it for you?
A lot. I think that you know, that we say intuition or just trusting your gut.
Mm-hmm.
I think I read somewhere that kind of your brain really is in your gut. I mean, that's what you should trust.
Well, yeah, I think I've read that your gut has a tremendous number of neurons. So yeah. It is like a second brain.
Yeah. And then your brain can actually talk you out of some things.
Yeah.
And I guess that's why it's important to, you know, trust your gut and go into action. And you know, there's interesting things where you, if you pursue something, you also wouldn't want to be, you know, just stupid about it and say, okay, well, hey, John said, as long as I'm in action, I'm pursuing it, then success is going to be guaranteed. Well, that's never the case. You know, you wouldn't want to mortgage your house on a business interest that you believe in that maybe not, you know, you always want to be a little bit smart and not take risks that could leave you, you know, exposed to harm.
So you need to use your brain power to at least weigh what's a good risk versus a bad risk.
Yeah. And I think I have to rationalize sometimes what it is, you know, what's driving the situation. That it's always important as being a music professional, you're self-employed. You probably know about this as well, you know, being a small business owner, that there's no guarantee on anything. See, first you have to set aside like a nice little cushion to take care of your family and take care of yourself.
If you're smart. Yeah.
If you're smart and then pursue it. So if you were to whisk away your all of your savings on an idea, well, then that's not really smart because that savings was to take care of your family. Maybe start another thing or find another way to go about it. But there's risky behavior that is not conducive to success. That's for sure. The other thing is that I think that it's something I plan to do too, is to find other people to talk to. I mean, it's great to have a mentor or somebody else to do it, just to bounce ideas off of.
Right. Somebody who has experience maybe in the area that you're wanting to pursue, who can maybe point things out that you hadn't thought of or didn't even know to consider.
Exactly. And I find that really important, that I am an open book to anybody that wants to know anything about what I do. When I was trying to become who I am, initially, people wouldn't tell me anything. Like they, you know, I'd ask them like, well, why do you do this? Why do you do that? And they wouldn't, there was always a little bit of fear that I was going to learn and take their job or do their thing or whatever that. And I was like, well, that's, you know, you have to believe in abundance and that there's as many jobs as anybody needs that want to do it and share that knowledge. It's interesting. The same people that wouldn't give me the information are no longer even in the music business.
That is interesting.
Yeah. And I've always set myself to be an open book and try to help people. And I'm like, you know, I might not know, but I'll give you an answer. I'll tell you what I think. And you should ask other people too.
So you don't feel threatened when people ask you for advice?
No, I really don't. Oh, then again, I do, you know, I'm a little bit more secure in life. I had been smart enough to save. I can make it a while. Like if things don't work out or if I'm not working or for whatever reason, I've always been working for about 30 years. I mean, it's never stopped. But I also ventured into real estate and I own a couple of properties here. So there's other things, you know, working to create security. And I always tell people, like, one of my pieces of advice for people is create security first. That allows you to do a lot of things when you're not worried about making that next payment all the time and not living beyond your means. all the great stuff is within your means. The most wonderful things in life are free anyway, you know?
Really good point. So what's your relationship with failure like?
Well, I failed an awful lot of times. Looking back now, those were, you know, fair weather never made a better sailor. If you don't run up against obstacles, if you don't fail, you're not really going to learn. Those are the best lessons you'll ever learn, and you'll be able to impart on somebody. Recently, I had a young fellow that I was teaching to be a tour manager, and I had him out as a tour manager on a tour. And it was really easy run of dates. He's a young guy. We've been training him and stuff. And the last day, he drank too much and got sick all over the bus, and it was just a horrible thing. And I said, well, you know, no matter what you do with this group, this is all they're going to remember. So he just learned this great lesson that he'll never forget, you know. Hey, if you're the tour manager, even though you're off and now I'm there and now I'm the tour manager and not doing the job anymore. Now, if you're whoever you are, you're that all the time, whether you're drinking or not drinking or after work or for work, that you're always accountable. We have to remember that behavior. So his failure in that case was very, hopefully very instrumental to his success down the line. My failures, I'd been bumped off of tours. One tour anyway. Done some silly things that I'll never do again that you learn. I mean, that's a great lesson. You should take a minute to lick your wounds. I think that's, but just not, you can't focus on them. You say, okay, learn my lesson, moving on.
So you don't dwell.
I don't. You know, it's funny. When I live in LA, I remember one time I got two parking tickets in one day. They're like $60, you know? And I went home and I just wrote the check and sent it in. And I said, okay, learn my lesson.
Done.
Moving on, you know? And I actually say that a lot, you know, forgive yourself and move on. If you're dwelling about it, you're not doing anybody any good.
Yeah. I found that some people can really have a tough time with the forgiving themselves bit. And I think sometimes because forgiveness is a really tall order if you haven't accepted what it is that you've done or what your situation is that you're not happy about. And I've always said that acceptance is not about, it doesn't mean you have to like it. It just means that you accept it. That, all right, so I got two parking tickets. That sucks. I don't like it. I'm going to write the check. And then you can forgive yourself after that. It's like, all right, I'm not the worst person on the planet for getting two parking tickets and for wasting $60.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you're a jerk to somebody, you know, and you realize later you're being a jerk to somebody. And then, you know, okay, I'm being a jerk to somebody. Let me go start being nice to people. And like you just have to, Yeah, you can't dwell on, okay, I did this. Oh my God, I'm such a bad person, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, we're all just works in progress.
Right, but that also implies self-awareness too. And it sounds like you can point your focus inward and assess yourself.
Check yourself before you wreck yourself.
Which not everybody, it doesn't come easily for a lot of people to be able to do that.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm lucky to have a supportive wife that...
Well, she'll point stuff out to you.
Not in such a way, but, you know, it's interesting. I'd always wanted to...
I was just teasing.
Well, you're never that, you know, in marriages, you're never that far off. You're married, you know. But I remember a long time ago, as I was like, you know, thinking about what she should be doing. Or how, you know, I wish she was different. And then, and now I see that where she's really spending a lot of time and she's really helpful in being positive and maintaining a healthy environment for success. And you really want to be around people like that. So that's it. I mean, sometimes I wake up and I can hear her singing to the dog and just happy. And it's like, wow, that's the best thing ever.
Yeah, very simple, but it speaks volumes, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, and it kind of harkens back to what you were talking about much earlier, And that was the whole thing about expectations. So having an expectation that someone should be a certain way or they should respond a certain way, I think it just gets us into trouble because it doesn't work that way. Life doesn't work that way. We don't have that much power, and I don't think we'd really want it if we did have it.
Yeah, I think that's it. We don't have that power, do we?
No.
You know,
I think we'd like to think we do.
Yeah. I guess we would. You know, it's interesting. Everybody has such a unique problem set that they face, and I always think, you know, the small things we dwell on, like I might be dwelling on something right now. I probably am. That seems insurmountable. But then I think about, wow, you know, people have real problems. My problems aren't real. I mean, they're not. They're just. It's just like a question waiting an answer. Just got to go do something about it. So that that energy that's out there, that energy that you can feed out of, if it's just a happiness or positivity or whatever that is, allows you to move forward. And I always say you have to keep fueling the fire. I mean, if you want a campfire, you got to put wood on it. So a lot of times we're always reading something positive or try to start a day off with a positive message, or I have, you know, Buddha quotes that pop up my phone. And then speaking to people like you that can reaffirm all those things we know and maybe bring them back in a different light to see them again. That's really the goal in life, like to be around that energy to get you through whatever your problems are, because they're going to be unique.
Another great point. Do you consider yourself a spiritual guy?
I very much do, yeah.
Yeah?
I think there's, I always say, to me, it seems like there's kind of a trinity in life. And yourself, spirituality, and your family. And your family can be whatever loved ones around you. But whatever one you're not paying attention to is acting up. So if you want to see what you're not doing, you know, if you're spending too much time on yourself, well, obviously your family is acting up and spiritually things are acting up and that's it. So I always try to maintain that spiritual side.
I like that Trinity model you have, but it requires that you have to notice and pay attention, right? Because we can get pretty self-involved. I think it's just part of human nature that we can get pretty caught up in.
You don't even really have to pay attention, Wendy, because the thing that's acting up is going to act up again and again and again. You'll pay attention.
You know? It'll get your attention. But no, I mean, as a psychotherapist, I can say from experience that sometimes you can get so caught up in your own shit that you don't notice the pattern that seems so obvious that's right in front of you trying to get your attention.
The spiral, right?
Yeah. No, you could get really caught, especially in dark emotions, anxiety and depression, and you don't realize that your symptoms or your upset or whatever it is actually getting in the way of your connection with your family or your connection with your work or whatever.
Right. And I don't know if you've ever experienced it. I know I have, where things have spiraled pretty good out of control. I mean, I think I spent one time a year of just feeling sorry for myself until something, thank God, something broke that cycle. It wasn't anything good either.
Well, usually you get sick of feeling sorry for yourself, right? At a certain point. I think, yes, you're right. We all have it. If we're lucky, we've only had one period like that in our lives. But those are periods that put hair on your chest for sure. It's that's because, you know, everybody wants more hair on their chest. But it's a great proving ground. It's a great opportunity for growth and reflection if you take yourself up on it. If you don't, life just gets more uncomfortable.
Yeah. Well, you know, the other thing is, it's interesting, and you could probably put some perspective on it. As you get older, too, that you do get a little bit more fearful. You know, you don't want to take those chances. The 30-year-old me would take a lot of chances. And time again, I moved from moving across country with really nothing, you know, just somebody found me an apartment, or, you know, just taking these chances on having a life that is different than other people have it. I mean, not having a job, not having a steady job and living, you know, hand to mouth. That's kind of a scary thing. I want to recommend people to do that, you know, before there was a gig economy like we have now. That took a lot of guts. And there's a lot of things, a lot of chances I took, or a lot of acts I worked for where I had to really, you know, battle that fear and do that. And as I, what I realized as I get older, we have to keep practicing getting out of our comfort zone, or we're going to be in our comfort zone for an awful long time.
And then miserable.
And yeah, maybe miserable. Maybe.
Yeah. You know, no, I do think that there is something to taking risks that is super important to push it. Like you said, pushing yourself out of your comfort zone.
It won't be bungee jumping for me. I think that ship has sailed.
Fair enough. Okay. I'll make a note.
We'll try some other risks.
Yeah, there you go.
However that is, the other thing we were, my wife and I were speaking with the other day was this an 82-year-old man. She works in the Apple store, and an 82-year-old man comes in the Apple store. You know, taking all the classes and learning things like that. She actually recommended him for a job because, you know, that is kind of what Apple, the spirit of Apple embodies is that we want that, those people that are outgoing and stuff. And my wife being in her 50s, even working at Apple, like that's kind of like everybody thinks it's just a kid's thing, but having a divergent group and the fact that this guy was such an amazing person that kept challenging himself at 82. If you hear most people in their 70s, even don't want to know anything about technology or new technology. And this fellow was pursuing it, which is wonderful.
It's really cool.
Yeah. Get out of your comfort zone and just try something new, figure it out.
And then, it gets back to trust.
Yeah.
Trusting that it'll work out somehow. We don't know how, we don't know when, but it'll work out. You'll survive.
I'm working on my Spanish again.
Muy bien.
Yeah. What I realized is that if I'm not doing it, I'm not going to get any better at it.
And yeah.
I could easily say, it's so hard. I'm never going to do it. But, you know, if you just do a little bit every day, it gets easier, right? I mean, there's always
learning. Are you trying to talk yourself into that, or you really believe it?
No. I do. I really believe it. I watch, my wife, well, it's funny because my wife and I were learning Spanish a while ago. We live in Los Angeles. It's a good language to have.
Absolutely.
And I've been working with a French band. I started learning French, and I confused the two, and I just bailed on everything. And I thought about it. It's like, you know, French is not the practical thing for me anyway, so I'm just going to go back. And she continues to go on and learn Spanish. She's got teachers, and she's doing a great, you know, she's off to Costa Rica, like in February to, you know, practice and you know, do an immersion kind of trip.
Wow, yeah. That's some dedication right there. That's cool.
That's great. Well, you know, she's an amazing person. She is a go-getter. She makes things happen. She doesn't rest.
Sounds like you two are well matched.
Well, yeah, I actually married her for that reason, to kind of get my ass in gear. You know?
Really? So she's more driven than you are, because you strike me as very driven.
She's dangerous. She's focused and driven.
Wow.
No, where I'm, we make a great team. We really do, because of the fact that she's super focused and she's analytical, and she can, you know, she likes to plan and do that stuff. I'm not a great planner. I'm just better in action. And I think why my job has always been good for me, because while we do the planning, we do all that, it's really about being the guy that has a plan when it all goes to hell. And that's when I think clearly. So when everything else is going wrong, I seem to have a clear, you know, I can just think and figure out the answer.
So you're good under pressure?
I'm good under pressure.
Yeah. You don't get paralyzed, which is not the case for everybody.
Yeah. You know, there's an interesting thing happened to me a year ago in Puerto Rico, where somebody was machine gunned down outside my hotel room.
Wow.
It's a big thing. And machine guns are loud and scary. And I had, immediately I was like, okay, there's a threat. And I got down on the floor and I went to the door, and then I said, oh no, I went back and I turned off the TV and turned off the lights, went back to the door. And I had to see if that threat was coming towards me. Is that a terrorist thing? Is that, you know, what's our next, you know, I have to investigate, look at that. And then fortunately it wasn't anything like that. It was someone murdered over drugs and the thing, but there was quite a lot of commotion out there where cars are trying to get away and people fleeing the scene and smashing into other cars. But what I thought was interesting is that I wasn't paralyzed by it. But I went into action. I immediately said, okay, we have to make a plan. Because we, I don't want to just sit there and then all of a sudden someone breaks in with a machine gun. I want to, at least fight for my existence, whatever's going to happen. And that's a very extreme example of that. But I always thought that's something I like to remember is that we don't want to be frozen. We want to be able to think clearly. We want to be able to go into action. And that's how we save ourselves. And that's how we, create ourselves.
Yeah, we're kind of wired to do that, right? Well, hopefully.
Yeah, you don't know. You don't know who is going to be the person that can go into action. You don't know who is going to just go freeze up.
Fight or flight or freeze, I guess, are the responses.
Oh, is that it? I know the fight or flight. Yeah,
fight, so, flight, or freeze. Yeah.
I have to think about back in the day as a kid and standing on the edge of the cliff waiting to jump in the water and it, spending an awful lot of time on that cliff. So I can appreciate the fear side of it. And the freeze.
Yeah, no, I've been on that cliff too.
Yeah.
I seem to keep finding myself up on that cliff a lot.
Yeah.
I'm just a glutton for punishment, I guess, or a giant risk taker.
Yeah. You know what? You're one of those innovators, one of those people that, that other people are looking up to so that they can, wow.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I would imagine most people do.
I doubt it.
Now, look, you're doing it. That's the testament to it all. I mean, and I got to go there and see your world, and I was super impressed.
Oh, thanks.
What a great, you created that life. We heard something from somebody the other day that said, we were talking about, I'll just tell you, my wife and I were doing some counseling because we're looking at remodeling our home, and it's, it's a gazillion dollars, and we know there's going to be problems, and we're going to fight, and we're just trying to find a path where we can both communicate effectively. And I was telling the therapist, we can't do that. It's too much money. She goes, but actually, you can do that. You have a choice. You always have a choice. You can make that choice. You decide not to make that choice. That's fine as well. But she says, if you look at it, if you really want to do that, you could sell one of your properties and do that, or you do myriad things. What I was saying was that, no, it can't be done because this is a situation. This is how much money I have. And this is, I don't want to spend that. I don't want to do it. So it wasn't impossible. And that really resonated with my wife. She's like, yeah, you don't want to do that. That's fine. But it's not that you can't do it. It's your choice.
So you need to distinguish between, is it that you really just do not want to do it, or you feel like you cannot do it?
Yeah. It's one thing if you have four flat tires, okay, you can't drive your car. Or you can drive your car and ruin all your rims.
Right.
You have a choice. You always have a choice. There is a...
That's a brilliant example.
I don't know where that came from.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. What kind of legacy do you want to leave?
Oh, that's a good one. It's interesting. That's something that I consider at this stage of the game is about giving back and creating something. And I don't have any kids. I don't know if you know that, except for one furry one. I really want to create accessible music for people. And I hope this will be my legacy, but I've had a kind of a dream about establishing kind of community music networks in cities. We were working with Compton for a while. There's been a few changes in personnel over there. It's kind of stopped.
But the city of Compton?
The Compton High School.
Oh, okay.
And I got on the board of directors for a charity that was called the High School Record Company or High School Music Company or something like that. And, I went to these meetings and they're great. Nobody's rah, rah, rah. I took a lot of pictures. And then nothing happened. And then I just was like, wait, okay, just nothing. No one's doing anything. I'll just sit back and wait. And then one day I was like, man, I'm just going to go to the high school and see what's going on. And I went down there. I found one of the people that presented to us at one of the meetings and talked to him. I thought it was great. What I realized is that the arts are the first things cut out of anybody's budget because they're not necessary to the short-sighted people. The arts are always the thing that lifts a community back up. And the thing that saved me as a child from all my demons was music. Being able to take a guitar, sit in a room for hours and hours and hours and, learn songs or play and just be able to create that. in your community, in everybody's community, there's hundreds of people that were musicians or very super talented that, you know, maybe decide to go another direction and do that, but want to get back and want to be part of that. And to have the infrastructure in place in a high school where they have, you know, rooms, you can do little studios, do a little performance venue, but use the people in the community to come in and teach and help. Some might be audio engineers. They might know Pro Tools or something like that. Some might be, you know, instrumentalists that can give lessons and help people get started. We can find resources from the community to donate instruments. There's, you know, gazillions of things in people's closets that can be used again. So Compton High School made it kind of easy because they had these the venue already there and some infrastructure going. But it was my first experience with, you know, red tape and how things like schools work, the hierarchy of millions of people. I'm on the road with a band. I make everything. I have a concert that night. It happens. You know, I never realized that you know, I can't imagine what working in government would be like or something. But there's so
lots of layers. Yeah.
We wanted to donate some computers for something they were doing right then and there. And it's like, oh no, they have to go here. They have to be cleared. They have to be this. They have to, I was like, oh wow. Okay. Can I just sneak one in and give it to them? Cause they're doing this now, not next
right.
year. But eventually we would get that out of schools if we could find, you know, the funding and just start them in, you know, an abandoned building in town or somewhere like that. Start that music school with studios, practice rooms. You would belong to it. You could also do concerts there to support that, kind of like 700 seat things. My dream was that you actually turn the walls around, full-time coffee shop, you know, and a restaurant that could be privately owned, but support that area would be all things like that. That I would love to be my legacy. And, you know, I should say that will be my legacy. To leave that, to create this gift for people to have access to music, no matter who they are, no matter what they do, no matter what their financial situation is. You don't need to be able to afford lessons. You can just go get lessons. You can go get and be with people that will help you achieve your dream. The other thing is, and this is interesting, this came from Pat Matheny, who's one of my clients. And initially, I was like, you know, it could be like a jazz thing or something. He goes, no. He goes, don't make it about jazz. He goes, hey, jazz guys all hate each other anyway, so they won't go. and I realized, you know what, make it about music. Help them if they want to be in a salsa band, if they want to be in a, you know, whatever the case may be, R&B or rap or death metal, give them an avenue to do that. Let them be all they can be and let them be around other people that can assist them in getting that way and making it a community. And that's the one thing I love about any project. If you can make it a community, you make it where people need each other and want to be around each other and realize the value of each other. And that's where everything kind of prospers. So that music community thing would be my legacy.
Music is medicine.
Music is medicine.
That's a beautiful vision.
Yeah.
Coming to a city near you.
Right.
In the near future.
Yeah. I haven't really thought about a catchy name yet. Huh?
Well, that's the first step, right? Then it'll make it more real.
Right. It's. I have spoken to some people about it, and they do like the idea.
Well, now you've spoken to, I don't know how many people are listening to this, but...
thousands.
Three or four people, maybe. Hopefully five or six.
Yeah. It all starts somewhere, doesn't it?
Exactly. Now that... I think it's cool to share your dream and to put it out there.
Yeah, it's nice to hear it. It's nice to even hear myself say it.
Right.
And I think it's also, you know, I think it's a huge help to, as we're talking right now, and even though this is for broadcast or podcast or whatever, it's great to find somebody like-minded to share things with. It's super powerful.
Well, this conversation has been super enjoyable for me. It's great to reconnect with you after all of these years. I remember we had such a fun time playing as kids. And here we are, like, what, 40 years later?
Our toys have gotten better.
Yeah, exactly. But this has been cool, and I think the wisdom you shared was really helpful, and I'm sure people listening to it will benefit from it. So I appreciate your time.
Yeah, you know, it's such a pleasure. When you asked me about this, I said, whatever, that's one thing that I'll put on the calendar anywhere. I'll make it happen because... I so enjoy what you're doing. you know, like I said, after we reconnected after all that, that's you became a very important person that I'd like to keep in all my life. You know, you're one of the winners that we're lucky we get a chance to know. So, I wish you all
the best. You're making me really uncomfortable. Thank you, though.
It's all good. Of course, now I'm going to ask for an extra bedroom for my wife to come and stay. I'm teasing. But thanks. Thanks for having me. And it was great to reconnect on this as well.
Yeah. Thanks, John. Well, John is certainly a great example of how persistence and passion can lead to success. Thank you so much for listening. If you're enjoying Lucid Cafe, there are a couple ways you can support the podcast. You can give it a 5-star rating on whatever podcast platform you use, or you can share it with others. I can't tell you how much I appreciate your support. Keeps me going. Until next time.